It's my prayer that each one of us appreciates the value of coming together to worship God, the importance of the opportunity that we have at a time like this. I hope that those that are listening by radio will appreciate the opportunity to study, to worship God in that sense, and those who are listening who are able to be in the assembly, that they will be in preparation to be at the assemblies that come at a later time today. We are glad to have each of you. We have many people out of town. We have many visitors this morning. Last Sunday morning, we had about 40 people sitting on these front seats from the Roanoke, Salem, Virginia area for CTS and Senior High Horizons. And this morning, we have a smaller group here from the same place who are here for the Junior High Horizons. And I'm sure there are others scattered throughout the audience who have come for that purpose, maybe to be in camp. We're just glad to have you in our midst. If we can be of service to you, please let us know. The word is evangelism. Perhaps there is no other word in the English language which in one word describes the purpose of the Lord's church than the word evangelism. When our elders made plans for the year of 2003 and emphasized a theme of letting the mind of Christ be in us throughout the entire year and selected some key thoughts for each quarter, evangelism was selected as the word that we wanted to keep in mind during the third quarter of the year. Evangelism. We have many people who believe in it. Received word last night late that our youth group had arrived in Nebraska to begin Mission VBS. Received word just an hour or so ago that we'd received a call that our medical mission group had arrived in Guyana, including, I believe, some 28 from this congregation and about that many from Estes and other churches have gone to be involved in a work there. I believe Brother David Thomas and his group that's been in Russia got back into town late last night. I can think personally of others that are scattered throughout the United States and throughout the world during this summer involved in evangelism. The word is evangelism. But I hope this morning that we can think a little bit about how we need to be involved in evangelism. Christ was involved in evangelism. He came to seek and save the lost, Luke 19:10. Paul said he came into the world to save sinners, as he wrote to Timothy, and then said, "Of whom I am chief," recognizing that the purpose of evangelism had made it possible for Paul to be a Christian. The purpose of the church, as explained in Ephesians 3, is to make known the manifold wisdom of God. That's evangelism. You cannot look at the Great Commission without recognizing that evangelism is involved in the marching orders of Christ. Paul again said in 2 Corinthians 4:7 that Christ had left his treasure in earthen vessels. That's us. And that treasure involves evangelism. It's not easy to open the Bible, especially in New Testament times, without seeing something at that opening that emphasizes evangelism. The reason for that is the importance of each soul. Evangelism is involved in reaching out to save souls, to bring souls to Jesus Christ. How much are you involved in evangelism? How much do you do personally try to bring people to Jesus Christ. Oh, you may not go on one of the campaigns. I'm not for sure that my talent leans in that direction as much as it maybe does in some other directions. I've not personally been involved in some of the efforts that some of the people here have. I appreciate so much what they're doing, but I've not been involved as they have in some ways, and maybe you have not either. Maybe you've not been on any campaign. You've not been anywhere as a part of an evangelistic effort in that sense. But do we have to do that to be involved in evangelism? I don't think so. I can look out over the audience this morning and see some of you who have brought people to Christ in a personal way. I also see some of you that I know who are at this very time working in a special way with someone, maybe in some instances more than one. Some in a teaching situation, some in a way just to influence them and encourage them to come to worship and Bible study. I know personally of some of you that are involved in efforts like that today. But maybe more of us need to become involved. And maybe we need to realize that evangelism includes something on a daily basis just as the opportunity is there. It may be just an opportunity to invite a neighboring child or neighborhood child to come with you to Bible class. If you could find a child that lives on your street that's not in Bible class and ask the parents to allow you to bring that child to Bible class and get him started, you may be able to save a soul and be involved in evangelism. And through that child, you may be able to reach parents and others just by showing some interest, just by using your automobile to bring somebody to a Bible class or to a worship service. It may be that you will have an opportunity on the job, just as a conversation comes up to talk with someone or some special person that you know, some special friend, to begin to show an interest in them and begin to let them know that you are concerned about spiritual welfare and that you are concerned about the soul and that you are interested. It may be somebody in your family, somebody who's not attending Bible class and worship, somebody who's not living the Christian life, that you can influence, maybe by word of mouth, but if not in that way, by word of life, as described in the wife's influence over her husband in 1 Peter 3. All of this can easily be a part of evangelism. That's what the word is. I believe there is no passage in the Bible that puts evangelism in proper focus any better than Romans 1, 14 through 16, the passage that was read in our hearing a few minutes ago. One of the reasons that I say that is because of three statements that are made in those three verses, each beginning with the pronoun I, a word that we usually say ought not to be used often. We tend to encourage people not to use the word I so much. But in this particular passage, Paul uses the word I, and he emphasizes the word I, especially in connection with the subject of evangelism. I want you for just a few minutes to look at those three statements. And it is our desire that the lesson this morning cause us to become a bit more involved in a personal way in evangelism. If when this service is over, you can remember these three statements and remember them in a personal way, a way that you want to apply them, this lesson will have been successful. First, notice the statement in verse 16. I am not ashamed of the gospel. I'm sure that each one of us would, without thinking, immediately say, well, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And I would hope that that is something that would be the truth in the case of each of us. But are we really able to say, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ? Do we take advantage of an opportunity to teach the gospel? Are we embarrassed if someone talks about the church and the gospel that's the central part of the church? Do we stand in silence many times when the gospel is being criticized or abused or misrepresented? I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Paul was proud of the gospel. He said in 1 Corinthians 15, 1 and 2, moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel which I preached unto you, which you also received, wherein ye stand, and by which you are saved. He went ahead a few verses later to explain the foundation of that gospel as being the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 4:15, he gave credit where credit is due. He said, I have begotten you by the gospel. The Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians 2:14, he said, you are called by the gospel. Paul was proud of the gospel. He was convinced that the gospel was the central part of evangelism and would do the job. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature was given as marching orders in the Great Commission by our Lord. Paul believed that. He was not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. He believed that when he taught people the gospel, he was doing something that was good for people. That he had the answer, not in himself, but in the gospel. He truly believed, as the statement continues here in Romans 1:16, that it was the power of God unto salvation. There is a tendency in our time to think that we need some kind of gimmick to get the attention of people and to lead people to Jesus Christ. I'm not convinced of that. Although we ought to be ready to use any method that is available to get the attention of people and to teach people, we need to believe that the power is in the gospel. We need to be able to say, I'm not ashamed of it. If someone were to, maybe in a way of ridiculing, say, oh, you mean you believe that? We ought to be ready to stand up in kindness and love, yet in firmness, and say, yes, I believe the gospel. I believe what the Bible teaches. And that's what the Bible teaches. Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And then he said another statement that begins with the pronoun I in verse 14. He said, I am debtor. He felt that he had an obligation. He realized that it was an opportunity, but he felt that it was an obligation. He felt that it was a responsibility. I am debtor, both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. He realized that people were lost without the gospel. And folks, that may very well be the first point that we need to emphasize in our thinking. There is no need of taking the gospel to someone who's not lost. It would be ridiculous to take something to people in other parts of the world and teach them about Christ, realizing that the majority of them will probably turn him down if they're okay without him. But they're not okay without him. Jesus said he was the only way to salvation, John 14:6. And this same Apostle Paul in Ephesians 2:12 said at that time, talking about the former condition of the Gentiles, you were without Christ, aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in this world. But then he says, now in Christ Jesus, ye sometimes who were far off are made nigh by the blood of Christ, and that blood of Christ is taught in the gospel. Paul believed that people were lost without the gospel. And so he said, I am debtor. Are we allowing ourselves today to think that that debt is on the shoulders of somebody else, but not on our shoulders? The overall debt was paid by Christ, no question about it. And he's not talking about the sense that he is debtor in that he can pay something for himself or for anybody else, but he's saying, I am debtor to get the gospel to people. I'm debtor to let them know that Christ has paid the debt. And he realized that he was debtor to all people of all types. And if you will just take a very quick trip through the book of Acts, especially chapters 13 through 28 that describe the work of the Apostle Paul mainly, you'll find that Paul realized that he had an opportunity sometimes when just one person was present. And yet he would seize the opportunity when maybe hundreds and thousands were present, even if the circumstances were not necessarily friendly, such as being in jail, such as Mars Hill, where they worshiped an unknown God. Paul believed that he was debtor. And when you believe that you have a debt to pay and you're really dedicated to paying that debt, you're going to be constantly looking for ways to meet that debt or portions of it in paying it. Paul said, I am debtor to preach the gospel and to teach the gospel. Honestly, how much debt do you feel this morning? As you go out this week and are associated with people, perhaps the majority of them not New Testament Christians, how much debt do you feel? Do you even think about it between now and next Sunday morning? That you, not somebody else, but you have a debt to pay when it comes to the teaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I am not ashamed of the gospel, and I am debtor. And then Paul says in verse 15, I am ready. I am ready to preach the gospel. I'm ready to preach the gospel even to you that are at Rome also. He said, I am ready. When there was an opportunity to go on that first missionary journey, Paul said, I'm ready. When they needed to go back, even though there were some disagreements and the same people didn't go, Paul said, I'm ready. Just give me somebody else to go with me and you go in that direction. I'm ready. Third time to take a journey to preach the gospel in different places, I'm ready. When the circumstances were such that he would be arrested and taken to Rome, he said, I'm ready. When there was an opportunity in Rome given to preach and teach, even in the household of Caesar, Paul said, I'm ready. I am ready. Those three little words embody a great deal. First of all, Paul was ready as far as his preparation was concerned. He had prepared himself in the Jewish religion, Galatians chapter 1, and then, of course, he was guided as God worked through him in a special way. He was prepared. He was ready. Someone asked him a question about Christ, he was ready to give an answer. If someone wanted to know how to become a Christian, he was ready to tell them. Someone needed instruction about daily living as a Christian, he was ready to teach them. the gospel and what the gospel had to say. He was prepared. But he was also ready in that he had an enthusiastic attitude toward wanting to do something to help people. There are people today who have a tremendous knowledge of the Bible who never do very much to share it with others, unless those others come to them. And then sometimes maybe are reluctant. Paul not only was ready in the sense of preparation, he was ready in the sense of taking advantage of an opportunity and looking for those opportunities. God provides opportunities, but he expects us to put forth some effort to find them. And sometimes the attitude that we have toward anything in life may open up opportunities because we're watching for those. Two people can walk by the same opportunity, one see it and one not. And you and I may be passing opportunities in life because we're not ready. We're not watching for those opportunities. An opportunity to teach the gospel or an opportunity to do good and be of service to someone. I am ready. When I look at that statement, I am ready, Paul's attitude toward helping others and teaching the gospel, I immediately think of a mother who has a sick child who during the night maybe is trying to get 40 winks, but who sleeps, as we sometimes describe it, with one eye open, who maybe is asleep as long as that child is resting, but when that child makes a move or a sound, that mother jumps out of bed immediately to see what the need is and to take care of that need. I think that's the attitude we need to have toward trying to teach the gospel to other people. We need to be ready, equipped, looking for opportunity, and apt to take advantage of that opportunity when it presents itself. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I am debtor, and I am ready. That's evangelism in a nutshell. And I want to challenge each one of us to think about those three statements and apply them. Really believing that the gospel is the answer, believing that we have an obligation to take the gospel to as many as we can, and preparing ourselves with knowledge and attitude to be ready to spring into action when there's any kind of an opportunity. The word is evangelism, because each soul outside of Christ is lost. Even our worship, though directed to God and with the main purpose of worshiping Him, has an element of evangelism in it every time, because we're interested in your soul if you're not right with God. That's why we encourage people to be baptized for the right reason, to be in Christ, to come asking for forgiveness if that's the need. It's evangelism. And if you need to come to Christ, we ask you to do that right now as together we stand and sing. Almost persuaded now to believe. Almost persuaded.